This is the 919 Beer Podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Now, here are your hosts for the 919 Beer Podcast, Joe Ovius, Adam Eshbaugh, and Wayne Holt.
It's the 919 Beer Podcast, Joe Ovius from 99.9 The Fan in Raleigh, North Carolina, Adam Eshbaugh, Wayne Holt from 919 Beer, and we're joined by Hugger Mugger today on the 919 Beer Podcast. We got Tim and David hanging out with us, and you guys are coming up on 5 years. I feel, though, it's been about 3 years since we chatted with y'all, right?
We're five and a half at this point.
Okay, gotcha. So it's been a while since we've chatted. So I guess we can kind of start with, I mean, clearly things are working out as your 5.5 years in Sanford. It feels like things are coming to you, given the way that the triangle's building out.
No question.
And people are pushing out, and Sanford continues to grow with it, and you guys have been there.
Yeah, there's no question with that.
Yeah, I mean, we've been very lucky. Sanford's made us look smart.
That's good. Nah.
Something we couldn't do for ourselves, Sanford is helping.
Uh-huh.
It's nice to see. Well, it's a mixed bag, as with all development. You know, it's nice to see nice things coming to Sanford area,
yeah.
Right? But the development pressure is also, you know, every time something's posted online about, you know, new development coming, there's always people there saying, oh, you know, do we have enough space to put all the cars? You know,
yeah.
Do we have enough services for these areas?
Right.
So it's all the problems of development, but there's definitely some good things in there too.
Yeah, it just means more people in the community and checking you out. So we're already opening beers. All right. The first thing I wanted to bring up, and I want to commend you guys, is that bottles.
Not still. These are new, right?
We've been in bottles for 2.5 years.
Okay. Yeah. Well, but basically what I'm getting at is that I don't really see a lot of breweries coming through when we try their stuff. It's cans. It's tall boys. It's crowlers when we see it. So with that movement, you guys are doing these bottles. Why? Simple question of why.
If you're going to put that much work and heart and patience and time and money into a product, you put it in the best vessel you can serve it in, and bottles, hands down.
Okay.
Cans just don't cut it.
Cut it in what way?
Quality.
Okay.
I mean, if you're gonna go to a can, you've got to invest into a $750,000 facility, production line with all the Q&A and everything that you need to do. I've worked at a brewery. We started with 12-ounce bottles with a machine from the 1970s. We redid the entire machine, learned it from the bottom up. All the specs were in German,
mm-hmm.
That kind of thing. Big carousel filler. We got it running, and after all the bugs were out, it was a beautiful machine.
Mm-hmm.
Ran like crazy. The product was fantastic. And then somebody had a great idea of chucking that and getting in a carousel canner, and it's probably $750,000, maybe half. You know, a big piece of machine supposed to be done right.
Right.
Sure enough, the thing comes in with the bowl cracked, way out of spec.
Yeah.
I've seen that same machine in two other breweries that has never actually came online before.
Huh. Okay.
So you have that machine, and if you want to invest in that, and you love it and you maintain it and that kind of thing, sure, that makes mm-hmm. sense. But in my experience, going from that and then to a forehead inline filler, that ran many, many beer cans on, and the maintenance those things require, and how delicate they are, and how they're engineered. I just don't see the quality there.
Okay.
And from the very beginning of Hugger Mugger, we never considered cans.
Mm.
I mean, mobile canning, no.
Yeah.
We really love our beer, and I've been doing this for, 18 years now?
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like I've got a grasp on what quality is.
I was going to say, yeah, I have strong opinions on what I think quality is.
Well, it's not even an opinion. I mean, it's
well, you say
the data leads to it.
So it's interesting you mentioned that, because I remember when we first started doing this beer podcast, almost 10 years ago, and going to one of the early bottle shops in the area, which was the original Bottle Rev on Lake Boone. And talking to Ted, who opened up that spot. And he always, you know, it's everything's bottles. But he always pointed out, well, cans are the future. Cans better, you know,
sure.
no light gets in, X, Y, Z. You know, he's like, it's not a popular opinion, but everything is going to cans. Ted was very, very ahead with
yeah.
that. And now everybody is doing cans and mobile canning in their own canning lines. So when you say it's not opinion, I find that interesting because I guess the industry thought is what Ted was laying out in terms of light and quality control and, you know, no leaky bottle cap or whatever it is. And that's why you've seen a movement towards cans over bottles, which people get obsessed with quality control and skunking and everything else.
Sure.
Now, I say this as somebody who has an appreciation for the aesthetic of bottles.
Yes.
And when you talk about presentation and the work that you put into it, and I see your bottles, it completely fits with what I imagine your brewery is about. And it looks great. And
yeah.
it's eye-popping. So I get it from that perspective. It's just interesting to hear you talk about the quality of what comes out of a bottle.
Well, the retail perspective, the retail side is going to want cans.
Yeah.
They're stackable, easy storage. They're primed for that. These are a little bit of an unusual size.
Yeah.
You know,
they look great. What is this? Are these 16-9s?
Yes, 500 milliliter.
Nice.
All our salespeople say the same thing. You should can. Mm-hmm. Because they want to get into retail spaces.
Okay.
And they want to push volume, right? But so there's just your at loggerheads two opinions. You know, David's, I can't say he's wrong because we have amazing shelf life for our product.
Okay.
So that's huge. And it's, this tastes really no different than draft, which is
that's another key, right?
Yeah.
So that being said, what is your target market with these bottles? Where are you trying to sell them into? Because clearly it's different that you're not seeing these in every grocery store on the corner, right?
These bottles were originally going to be as a marketing tool for us. I always wanted to put Monsters on labels. I think that's cool. And we got a fun brand with our dark sense of humor, silly names, and that kind of thing. A lot of breweries do. How do you differentiate yourself? We can get into that in a minute. But the bottles, we wanted people to aesthetically pick up a bottle. And for my entire drinking career, everything that I've ever held as beautiful beer, Belgians, and whatever, which I'm inclined to enjoy myself, always came in a bottle. And I think if you're actually trying to seek the truth of what you're really trying to do, you know, if you step back, there's market pressures and all that kind of thing, but if you step back and figure out what you're trying to do, if you want to put the best product and the best vessel to get to someone to say, hey, I loved making this, I want you to enjoy it, I want you to have this particular experience. I'm a big music fan. I've been in the hospitality industry for a long time. Both of those are very experience driven. There's no question. Mm-hmm. Your favorite music, there's people out there that when they touch any instrument or pick up a mic, it's a masterpiece as it comes out of them. And I'm not saying I'm that as a brewer, but for me to put all that into that and all the work that Tim and I have done over the years, for us, and in my experience, bottles are the best vessel. The machine that we have is hand-built with my neighbor. It's a four-head counter-pressure filler. There's no complexity in that system. The more complexity, the more servos, actuators, all this kind of stuff that you add into that system, any of those things break down, you've got a problem.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you spend $25,000, $50,000 on a machine, it's going to be engineered with $25,000, $50,000, depending on what options you got, whatever, depalletizer, rinser, whatever. But in our system, the beer comes from the tank, exactly ready to drink, and it goes straight into the bottle, CO2 purged, capped on foam. Every bottle's hand-touched, packaged. We control everything. So instead of like a market standard of, you know, 10 parts per million.
Mm-hmm.
We test our bottles as 10 parts per billion dissolved oxygen. The lowest microbiological activity than our lab has ever seen in our bottles, because there's no complexity to the system. It's
mm-hmm.
straight from the tank into our vessels.
Okay.
Brown Glass does a great job.
Yeah.
There was an article that I read just recently, I believe New Belgium put it out, where they put, is it cans or bottles? we see these articles, there's never a conclusion.
Of course.
Right? But they did say in the article that they noticed in brown glass much less degradation of the beer after several months.
Okay.
But there's no... They put it right there in the article, and they said...
Right.
And I know the argument is cans are lighter, gas, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, cans are harder to recycle. Glass is silicate. It's very inert. Cans have BPA in them.
Yes.
There's all that that I personally just don't... We don't have any shelf stabilizers, no enzymes, Clarity Firm, any of that stuff in our beer. So that's just... holds to the truth of what we're trying to accomplish.
I'm with it.
To give people that experience. I mean,
and I'm with you. I'm in complete agreement with you on experience.
Yeah.
Drinking beer is a easy enough thing, but if I'm going to be going to a craft brewery, I expect, and I'm going to be paying craft brewery prices, I expect a little bit more with it, and that's where the experience comes in. So again, I'm completely on board with what you guys are trying to do. I love the aesthetic that you guys have as well. As you say, it's a little weird and fun, which again, that's all part of the experience and why I enjoy craft beer. Just be a little weird and fun with it. If you want generic, you can go find plenty of other things that are generic. So let's actually talk about the beer. We just went triple right out of the gate, right?
Yeah.
We went with a Belgian right out of the gate because why not?
Right.
Now we're not going to start light. So what was the first one that you poured? That was the Haster,
King and Yellow Belgian Triple.
Haster.
Yes.
Okay. So Belgians, we were talking about this before we hit record. I've been informed that Belgians do not sell.
According to some.
So what is the, what's the hang up with Belgians then?
A lot of breweries don't know how to brew them well.
It's as simple as that. So you just say, yeah, they don't sell.
From my experience.
You notice the patient, not condescending tone David just said that.
I know. I love it.
He delivered it nicely.
Yeah. It's all about the packaging. Yeah. So what do you mean a lot of breweries don't know how to brew them well?
I've been to Belgium several times. I ran a Belgian beer bar for several years. Drank a lot of Belgian beer. I've hung out with Belgian brewers. They'll gladly tell you what's in their ingredients and that kind of stuff. They will not tell you what the process is to save their life. They won't. They clam up. And I was able to gain just a little bit of friendship with some of these guys, you know, through a few emails, reading some books, those sort of things. You throw the books aside. They're all wrong about Belgian beers. And, well, many of them are wrong. There's a few out there that's fairly, well, approachable. But just having so many Belgian beers, I mean, I kind of really realize what I see in them, what I want them to be, and what Tim and I talk about as far as an experience goes. And this is what we put forth in front of people. And sure enough, our Belgian beer program sells like crazy at the beer hall. And in the market, the ones we put out, we're never bringing them back.
Okay. Well, yeah.
We have people, you know, like you said, we're not out. We're not trying to get out in all the major grocery stores. Again, our bottles are part of our marketing program to people to see us out there to bring us to the beer hall. And that's how the whole idea behind the bottling is. So, you know, we want to put the best beer we possibly can in a great package. And that's the whole kind of concept of the experience. And then a lot of breweries, you know, okay, if you go to a brewery and you see a sign that says Belgian triple 9%, we know exactly who that guy is, right?
Yeah.
We're looking for someone that's going to come in and want the highest ABV for the money.
Mm-hmm.
Let's catch a quick buzz.
Sure.
That's the truth.
Sure. Right?
What is the issue with a lot of Belgian triples? When you try them, you get into a glass and a half, and there's a little bit of a honey, kind of cloying kind of quality.
Mm-hmm.
Makes it a little bit difficult to drink.
Yeah.
So let's explore the truth of why people want to drink this beer. So, for example, this beer has some tricks. In the end of the finishing boil, we actually add some finishing hops to clear up that cloying sweetness to make the next drink. It cuts through, and you can continue to drink this beer to where it becomes a disaster. And you lose a couple hours at
Haster
your night.
Haster the disaster.
And that's the intent is for people, if you want to go in and drink a Belgian triple, you know, you want to time travel, well, this is the beer for it.
Time travel.
I mean, that's it. I mean, that's the truth, right?
I get what you're saying. Yeah.
And it's a very drinkable, dangerously drinkable 9% Belgian triple.
It does have a significant amount of sweetness, but it also dries pretty well. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the big problem. When I don't want to even say a lot. I don't drink a lot of triples. It's just not my
yeah,
style.
I was going to say, typically my triple consumption is here on a podcast where somebody brings in, you know, like you guys bringing this in. And it's good, but to your point, I'm usually sampling them in small batches. So yeah. I get, oh, yeah, this tastes really, really, I can, et cetera. But I usually, when I'm going somewhere, it's because I want to have multiple beers. So I usually will stay away from a beer like this unless I know it's going to be my final beer and I'm moving on.
I feel like it's a time and a place. Like if you're at a cool beer bar, what's the Monk?
Monk's Cafe?
In Philly. No, I'm talking in Asheville.
Oh, yeah.
Thirsty Monk.
Oh, yeah.
I remember there. It's the first place I ever had Pirat. It was just a really cool experience.
Yeah.
I'm not going to sit there and drink three of those watching football, though. Right? Like, that beer is going to wreck you. Like, there's certain things that I will, not certain things. There's just certain beers that are more experience-driven beers for me, or time and place beers. A Belgian triple is one of them.
That
maybe it's obviously on this podcast, but maybe it's coming into your tap room and drinking it over the course of an hour and chatting about all the wonderful things the beer has and all your amazing artwork on the on the walls, right?
A lot of this to go.
Oh, yeah, chilling at home.
Bringing it home.
I was going to say, chilling at home on a Friday night?
Yeah, great. Yeah. It's just not my, like, that's not, sure. This isn't a beer I drink by myself. Imperial Stout's not a beer I drink by myself.
Right.
But I'll share it with somebody and appreciate it.
Yeah.
Before we get into another one, though, how are you selling these? Are they singles, four packs? What's the packaging, total packaging?
They come in a 12-pack box with three PackTech rings that you snap on top, and we allow the merchant to either sell them by four packs or sell them by singles.
How do you sell them out of the brewery? Just singles?
Singles, singles, four packs,
however many
you want. Throw them in your bag, whatever you want to do.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yep.
All right. We've got a bunch of stuff to open. Tim, you handed... What did you hand me? Where'd it go?
It was the...
That Barry... Oh, it's right here.
The Von Sucka.
Yes.
Barry Von Sucka. It's a Barry squishy ale.
What makes it squishy?
We know what makes it Barry.
I know what makes it Barry. I know what makes it an ale. But what makes it squishy other than my dad bought?
The slushies that were out for a couple years.
Oh, right? Yeah.
This is our version of a slushy without being slushy.
No, you can actually drink it. It's not like drinking a Danimal.
You don't need a straw.
Yeah. Right. Or a spoon.
I mean, you could.
Yeah. Normalize drinking beer through a straw.
But it's a super fruit beer. Is what it is. Blackberry, red raspberry, passion fruit.
What are you using fresh ingredients? Is this a seasonal thing, or are you using like Oregon fruit?
No, don't use any aseptic purees. We have a company. I've processed in the brewery before, fresh fruit, that sort of thing. But also, again, trying to seek the truth. Go to the place that can give you the product in its best form possible. So we have a processor that we can choose organic and shade grown, whatever that is, and it's beautiful product comes in with it's frozen. It's not aseptic purees. There's no preservatives. There's no nothing. It will spoil like that. So it comes in frozen. We use it immediately, and you can taste it's fresh.
Yeah.
You know, there's
no. It tasted real.
Better. It tastes real. There's no
absolutely nothing artificial about it.
That's it.
And it was 6%.
Yeah.
Like. Talk about time travel, like
the
dangerous thing about one of those to me is it's just it goes down so easy, like you can drink three of them before you know it, and unlike a triple,
yeah,
a triple's a sipper for me,
yeah.
Okay,
we would like to make dangerous beers, that's for sure.
All right, so I opened up the farmhouse ale, Gimgul.
Oh, good, I want to taste that one.
This is excellent. It's super earthy and delicious.
Gimgul.
So with Gimgul, what are you guys like? You guys like hanging out in Chapel Hill? Like, what is what's going on here with Kim Gould? I see Kim Gould, and I'm thinking of UNC bros hanging out on a weekend, getting smashed.
That's it.
Is that what that is?
That's what we put on the label.
That's what it is. Like, this takes you to a time where frat bros just go nuts, and you hear stories. But you can't talk about Kim Gould because it's like a super secret society.
And it's a private residence.
And it is a private residence, yes. So, all right. So, what's the story behind Kim Gould Castle?
It's just a funny story. Around the turn of the century, a gentleman by the name of Peter Drimgoole, coincidence, had a duel with another man over his love, Miss Fanny. And lost his life, apparently, on a rock on Kim Gould Castle.
Aha.
So that's as far as I'll go with that story.
Okay.
Go look it up for yourself.
Gotcha.
Thought it'd be fun for a story for the farmhouse sale. And if you see on the label, that little guy there was Kim Gould Society's marketing at the turn of the century, back in the late 18s.
Oh, okay.
And that was taken directly from, I'm sure the copyright has passed, but...
Oh, okay. Oh, so this is where...
This little guy is just amazing.
Okay, so it's an amazing logo. I love it. And the reason... Okay, so a little bit of backstory here.
It would be a good t-shirt.
Yeah.
That would be a good t-shirt. I'm a little surprised when I saw Kim Gould, because I don't think I'm giving away too much of the game here. My wife is an attorney, and she deals with IP, trademarks, those types of things. And there was a brewery that tried to get off the ground, but they ran into issues because of the name Kim Gould. That's not you guys, obviously. You guys are doing this. So when you said that this expired, so this is just you just took it? Did you use it?
Somebody did.
Somebody did. Okay. No, just
open source.
It's all open source. Creative Commons.
Also, allegedly.
Allegedly. Okay.
I heard.
Okay. Anyway. No, sorry. It piqued my curiosity because I'm just remembering a time where my wife
now
had to...
Now you
got to
bring up legal stuff.
No, it just made me think of this thing that happened.
What is this beer?
All right. So this is a farmhouse ale, and this can be done all sorts of different ways. So what are you guys trying to go for here?
Who knows what a French farmhouse ale is, right? Books have been written about it. Books have been bitten, disproved. The idea is basically to try to tear out of the atmosphere what would be brewed locally, regionally, what people be drinking, those sort of things. So you have some caramel malts here, some oak applied to it, carefully with some medium toasted oak spirals during fermentation. And we do that because we can taste as the beer gets to where it wants to be as far as the oak goes, we can pull it and make a very consistent caramel crystal product with the vanillins and tannins in there just right. And we don't have a barrel house to where we have to throw out a third of our beer. So this process, again, gets us to where we want to be in the best way or process possible. And now you end up with this really beautiful amber beer that's rustic, not overly hopped, and it just really speaks for itself. It's a delicious beer to sit down and contemplate things with, in my opinion.
It's my favorite of the three. I think it's the most complex so far.
Sure.
As far as everything's in it, those tannins really, really come through, especially as it's kind of warming up.
And length.
Yeah. It lingers.
Yeah.
But in a good way. What's your yeast for this?
This is Lallemand's actually new farmhouse ale yeast. I work pretty close with Lallemand. I know several of the employees. I've come up with processes with them.
My daughter wears a lot of Lululemon.
Lululemon. Yes.
Different company?
Lululemon.
Different one.
All right. Anyway, as you.
I think it's a different division.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a terrible joke. I won't say it.
It couldn't have been worse than one I just said. So, well.
Slightly.
What is your farmhouse ales, saisons, a lot of people use those terms interchangeably.
Sure.
And they can, I mean, we just talked about how, what a variety they can produce, but what is your, how do you work on your fermentation for this beer? Do you let it free rise, or do you try to keep it at certain temperatures? Because there's all different, I don't think you're free rising this.
No.
I think you keep it lower than, you're not going out at 90 some degrees, because it's not super estery.
Right. Right.
That's why I wanted to ask.
It goes up to about 87.
Really? It gets that hot?
Yes. This was a cleaner yeast that they have released just recently that I wanted to play with and see what their interpretation of a farmhouse ale yeast. Who knows what clone this is, right?
Sure.
But for,
I would not have guessed it was that warm because it's so clean.
And in their profile, they have it as a fairly clean French yeast.
Okay. Right?
But again, I mean, who's the defining term of what a farmhouse or saison is?
It's all over. Right? Yeah, it's all over the place. Right.
Yeah. No, I was just curious about it. I really enjoy that beer.
So it goes up to about 87.
Dutch.
Okay.
And we ramp it down slowly. And when we get it down to 40, that's when we check it for the tannin extraction.
Okay.
Because you have the pores open up in the wood when it's warmer. It closes down, so you're slowing down that process.
Right.
And you can really dial in how much vanillins and tannins you want to extract from at that 40 degrees.
Okay.
To answer your question.
No, yeah, thank you. No, it's...
Yeah, it's
I really
pretty,
enjoy
it's
I really
beer.
Enjoy that beer.
Ooh, all right. Now,
all right, Joe, what's next?
I'm sitting here like...
We have three left.
We have three left. There's an Imperial IPA.
Wait, you have an orange something.
There's a Chocolate Factory Meltdown, which I think this is going to be the last one we do. Yeah. And then there's the Screamsicle. So what do you want to do, Adam?
Screamsicle.
Screamsicle it is. Here you go. I'll give that to you. I'm going to like polish off the rest of this farmhouse ale.
Is Wayne allowed to talk?
No, Wayne doesn't want to talk. Wayne's too busy looking at TikTok. So... The algorithm's feeding some quality content.
Why is it every time I get on this app, it's all I
it's
see
all
is
short midgets.
Why am I always
in women's clothing?
Yes. Why am I always seeing this? Well, because that's what you like.
Who's going to tell him?
Yeah. Who wants to tell the pastor that?
I love that.
The algorithm
loved it.
Feeds you what you look for.
What you look for. The algorithm knows. All right. So while we're pouring all these things out, food. You guys do food, right?
No
food. Why do I think you guys did food?
Food trucks.
Food trucks.
Yep.
Okay.
I will say, just while we were talking about the farmhouse ale, I just did a shepherd's pie last week.
Yeah.
I thought you said you didn't have food.
What?
He himself did it.
It was the yolk. Anyway.
Ha, 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 ha.
And that did
that goes
trick.
Well? Yeah, I can see that.
Yep. It has some legs.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's hearty food with a food beer.
I can talk about that beer for more time, but... It's gonna bore most people.
Yeah, well, you know, we also have a time limit here because I do have to get back to my real job.
We'll talk about that after the show.
Fair enough. I'm gonna, you know what, guys? Straight up, based on the description, I was like, no, I'm not gonna like this.
What's the description?
Well, it is a. What do we got here? It is a Mandarin cream sour ale. I see cream in something. I'm like, nah, I'm good. There's probably gonna be a lot of stuff in here. I was incorrect. This is more subtle than I was anticipating. It's really, really good.
What does Mandarin cream sour ale mean?
And it's downright refreshing.
Yeah.
Seriously, it's like, oh, this is brunch beer.
This could be a good slushy.
This would be
really good slushy.
This is 10 a.m. with a nice breakfast. Right here, little
8:30 tea time.
Let's go. All right. So what are we going for here?
Exactly what it says, Mandarin cream ale.
Okay.
That's been soured.
So it is a cream ale.
No.
So it
not
has
a, not an
lactose.
American cream ale. Cream as in a dreamsicle.
Yeah.
Okay. So you've added lactose to it.
Yes.
Okay.
Correct. And that sweetens it up. You know, has that milk kind of. Nice.
But it's not milky.
It's not milky.
Not milky.
Not
that's,
like,
that's the thing.
Yeah. It's refreshing.
Yeah. And that's what it's meant to be.
I wish almost the sour word throws me off too because it tastes more like a legit Mandarin orange than a sour beer.
Well,
Wow, what is
what's
happening?
What's the definition of
are they tearing this place down?
Are we getting beamed up
that
right now?
That vibratory temp behind the building is really making some waves, so to speak.
Who
right?
knew a tectonic plate went right through downtown
Cary?
Yeah,
what is going on right now?
Wow.
Where did you build this place, Wayne?
Vibratory temp.
Woo!
Just running a roller bit of vibratory temp on it.
Okay, then.
Wow.
It's our little forklift buddy right here.
Oh, is that what you're watching on TikTok? Vibratory taps? Is that what you're looking at?
Yeah, that's what he said.
This is just radio gold today. We are just slaying
we're just all over the place today.
Anyway, like I was saying before, the vibration distracted us all.
Yeah.
It is, to me, it's not sour. It's not creamy. It's like, it's Dreamsicle-esque, which is why it's, I get the Screamsicle. It is
not a melted ice pop is what I'm getting at, which is good.
Yeah, it's not that it doesn't have sour in it, and it's not that it doesn't have creaminess to it, but it's not, it's just super balanced.
Yeah. We'll stop mumbling here.
It's tasty. I enjoy
it's
it.
It's good. I like that.
So much I can't say the right words.
Well, early on, I mean, when Tim and I were talking, we thought it was a really good business model when we approach beers to have them intend to be drink at least three of them in a session.
Yeah, like Haster.
Right. And so to make something unbelievably sour that people can't really drink.
Sure.
Or takes the enamel off their teeth, that's not our jive.
Okay.
I remember when we first started talking about the beer program, sours weren't really a part of that. And it sort of grew because I think Brutal Zeds was the first, and then that was our first sour, and that and it got a very good reception. But I remember the first conversation we had about it, I'd been out in Asheville at the Funkatorium, mm-hmm. and I was there with a friend of mine, and we walked in, and man, I swear everyone just looked miserable. They're all up to the bar with their beers, and I'm like, okay. So I sampled some of the beer, and it was really sour.
Yeah,
it was very sour.
Yeah,
and I said, okay, well maybe that's part of it, or maybe I'm just here on a bad day. So when I came back and talked to David about it, I'm like, yeah, I don't know if that's really going to fly.
So, you
know, but what came out of it was a conversation about the sour. It doesn't have to be so puckeringly tart and sour,
yeah,
right.
You know, that you struggle to finish one.
Do you feel that there's a demographic that simply just wants to go for that kind of stuff?
Yeah. Yes,
absolutely.
Okay, just it's not necessarily about the quality; they're just looking for like the most sour thing they can find.
No, I don't think that's it. I think there are a lot of people who have had, more traditional beers that they find to be filling.
Okay,
either because perhaps the beer wasn't fully fermented or attenuated. Maybe it was just a sweeter style of beer, but they don't like a sugar content in their alcohol.
Gotcha.
So they'll go for, a wine or a liquor. And I really feel like sours can be appealing to people who are otherwise not beer drinkers.
I see. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yes.
That makes sense. I just didn't know if it was from I like this particular thing, so I want the most maxed out version of it. I mean, we're not that far removed from the hop slams of the world, where everything had to be just bonkers in terms of, the international bro units and everything else. So it's sour. All right, well, let's take sour to the max. But, yeah, I can see where if you are averse to sweetness, you might want to go in a different direction. And honestly, from my own perspective, as much I've cut out a lot of sugar from my life, and I've noticed that when I've gone back to what you would describe as a beer-flavored beer, a PBR, I realized just how freaking sweet those things
sure.
are. And I can't. I used to drink PBR all the time. Now I can't do it because it's too sweet to me.
Because you're too good for it, apparently.
No.
I still drink plenty of PBR.
This is where I go to the High Life. The High Life is undefeated.
There's also, I mean, you can do some things with sours that you can't do with other beer styles.
True.
So with that same beer that, I'm sorry now we didn't bring, but the Brutal Zeds has a crisp acidity to it that, it's really what white wine drinkers would probably recognize as kind of a signature of, some styles of white wine, like a New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc.
I got you.
Right?
So now we've gone to a mango.
The pits of despair.
Mango peach
sour.
Don't
even think about trying to escape.
I love these names. You guys always crush it with the names. I appreciate that. All right, so we started with Belgians. Now we're talking about sours, and I'm just going to go back to a conversation we were having before we hit record. In that, sours being made properly versus Belgians being made properly. So in your mind, what is a, you know, what makes a sour beer properly made, or how do you view it?
We've had, you've had plenty of kettle sours. Neither one of these are kettle soured.
Yeah.
These are co-pitched in a process that I'm not even familiar with anybody else does. I'm sure they do. This is made with Quebec yeast.
Okay.
And it's pitched with the lactobacillus at the same time and fermented at 95 degrees.
Wow.
This beer is done in 3 days.
Yeah.
And that's our process I found that gives a very pleasant sourness. Again, there's much softer on the acidity, even though the pH is at 3.2. I feel like it's a much more approachable way to sour, and it gives a beer that's much more drinkable.
Mm-hmm.
Again, goes back to it stands alone on its own. It doesn't sound like a beer, a sour beer that's been fruited.
Right, right. Right.
Screamsicle has its own DNA. This beer has its own DNA. And that's why I brought two sours to show you kind of the idea of the differentiation between the two sour beers themselves. Because we do approach sour beers differently than many breweries.
Yeah, I'd say. So, I mean, this beer, not that it doesn't take technique and love, but it doesn't take aging for a year and a half in a barrel either.
Sure.
So you can produce plenty of this. I have a question, and I don't mean this in any other way but asking, because I enjoy these, but I also know we talked about those sour beer drinkers that want the over the top in your face puckering effects. Do you ever get complaints from those people that your beers aren't sour enough?
I don't think
you understand
heard
what
that,
I mean. Yeah. I'm not saying they're not sour enough. I enjoy them.
I'll put it to
but
you
But I'm
this
just
way.
Saying some of those folks that you might see at the Funkatorium or New Belgium or somewhere like that are kind sometimes looking for the most sour thing
like
you have.
Maybe they would say we're not doing a serious sour.
Or they're just not
comparing
not
it to
sour.
Cantillon.
Yeah.
Cantillon sour.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just curious. Because
that
word,
hear
that word
bar.
Sour, it's like the word
yes.
hoppy, right?
Yes.
There's a range.
That's intent. We want to avoid that and try to, again, what's the truth of this thing that we're trying to do? We're trying to make very drinkable beers that are our own designation, their own ideas. And I don't, like when we try to come up with a recipe, we don't go to the internet or the book or anything. Tim and I will sit down and talk about what are we trying to do here and then create that rather than, you know, another BJCP beer or whatever. We don't, you know, we don't put our bottles in many competitions because, frankly, we're out of style all the time.
You're out of style?
For BJCP, oh, yeah.
For guidelines,
yeah,
style
for
guidelines.
Our beers okay. ended yeah. up getting entered into style categories that's not how we're selling.
So basically, for those who might not be familiar with this, if you go to a competition and you want to enter what's a beer that
Belgian
would not...
Triple.
Okay, the Belgian triple. So you're going into a bunch of other, you're going up against other Belgian triples. So what's taking you out of it? Because what are the guideline are you not adhering to?
What do we end up in a Belgian strong category, right?
Just strong beer, actually.
Yeah,
yeah. Because that if you put this our Haster up against other Belgian beers blindly,
yes.
And I've done this.
Mm-hmm.
What's your favorite Belgian beer?
They'll point you out.
8 out of 10 times.
So yeah, what takes you? That. So what takes you out of it then, specifically?
It's a little too clean.
Okay.
A little the funk maybe not there as presented as well.
Okay.
Because again, we're trying to brew beer that people want, and not necessarily know that yet. So BJCP doesn't do that whole. So like that beer won. A bronze in just an open strong beer category.
Okay.
So we knew it wouldn't in the Belgian triple category.
Gotcha.
But why do what everybody else is doing in a box of...
No, makes total sense to me. Makes total sense.
Sour's the same thing. I mean, these aren't... They won't win in sour competitions, because they're not sour enough compared to other beers. If you're going to taste them, you have a sour, blows your palate. This beer, you're going to come back to it, and you're going to find that it actually is pronounced. There is sweetness. There is other components to the beer.
Okay.
But on these things, I'll put it, Adam's question the other way. Most people, when they come into our bar, they say they don't like sours, and we trained our bartender to say, we hear people say that a lot, try ours.
Try this, yeah.
And 9 times out of 10, people will try the sour, and then half the time, will order a sour from us. Because, again, we intend people to really enjoy their experience and not try to strip the enamel off their teeth.
Okay, yeah. So we got the Loop You Lunatic. This is an Imperial IPA.
Throwback, yep.
I was going to... Would this qualify for these types of things? Because at least upon taste and what you guys are going for, like you said, it's a throwback. I know what I'm getting with this.
I mean, it's...
Well, let's see if you do. So throwback, what would you think of this should be? Yeah.
I mean, it's...
It's a West Coast to me. Yes, it's clear.
It's focused more on the bitterness.
Focused more on the bitterness, which I enjoy. I'm glad that people are going back to West Coast IPAs. That's been the case the last couple of years. So that's what I would say.
Well, I would just... on that point about people going back to West Coast IPAs,
yes.
I'm not really seeing that in the market because I
favor
the market West Coast.
And then there's the brewers. You're right. I should make a distinction
because I would love it if the market swung back that way.
Because my issue with, and again, I say this as somebody who is fully aware that the palate is not the most nuanced. Okay, but I see a modern IPA or a New England IPA or juicy IPA, and I just go, cool, you're just hitting me with a flavor bomb, and I don't care for it anymore. Like, I've done it. I know what I'm getting. It's the same old, same old. But with a West Coast IPA, I feel like there's more nuance in the craft of it all. And to Adam's point, I admit that I lean more towards the bitter end of it. Maybe it's my personality. So I've appreciated through the beer podcast the last couple of years where they're bringing West Coast IPAs. I'm going, yes, thank you. And I can drink it, you know? I know that sounds really like drag knuckles, like, you know, I'm going to drink a beer. But it's true because sometimes with those like incredibly juicy, almost mimosa-like beers at times, like, I'm good, man. Like, I had a taste of it.
It's very palate coating.
Yeah.
Or it can be. It doesn't
can.
Have to be.
So brewers are always trying to maybe push one way or the other. You get bored with something, you want to go back to something. I get that. But you're saying the market's not going along with it.
I mean, from what I've seen, no.
Okay.
You know, I go to some places.
I actually appreciate you guys having brought New England.
You know, my wife was just out in Boone, and I asked her to stop at Peabody's there because they've got an awesome selection of beers. And she brought back a selection, but it was, I mean, even Peabody's that does an amazing job with their beer selection.
Yeah.
I mean, there wasn't a whole lot available. And there are places I go to that have cases and cases of beer, and you won't find a West Coast IPA.
Interesting,
yeah.
And
interesting.
I don't know which side of the market that falls on, if it's the retailers trying to do what they think consumers want best, or if it, consumers really are going in and asking for that. This is for the... I'm sorry.
No, I was interrupting you. Go ahead, finish.
No, for us in the beer hall, this is pretty much... This has been since day one. It's a West Coast IPA. Mm-hmm. Folks have adopted it. It has a regular following, but it's not blowing the doors off the other beers.
Huh.
And
okay.
But it's my favorite beer that we have.
It's great.
Yeah,
your point on I don't know if it's the retailers or the market, or it's a combination of a lot of, we know it's a combination of a lot of different things, and it's also case dependent. It depends on where you are. I was at dinner Saturday evening. Granted, it was an Italian restaurant, but they have like a dozen taps. I was hoping to get something hop forward, not hazy. They had 4 hazy IPAs out of 12 taps. Yeah. That, to me, says your beer buyer doesn't know what they're doing. Simply. Because you're not providing an experience for everyone. You weren't for me that night, right? Also, they well, the only Pilsner they had on was Peroni. That's what I went for. But
well, also to defend this anonymous beer buyer, they may not have been presented with West Coast styles. Again, I don't see a whole lot of them out in the market. So
you're not seeing a whole lot of them out in the market in comparison to the hazies.
Yeah.
But we are seeing some, at least we're having conversations with some breweries that are coming in here, and the brewers are all for it. And that's what it's going to take to to get people to just enjoy them as well. Again, but I think a lot of the new IPA drinkers, and I've said this a bunch of times, a lot of the new hazy IPA drinkers are people who weren't IPA drinkers to begin with and drank other styles, particularly fruited wheat beers, and now they have gone to the hazy route because it's not better. It doesn't have much bitterness, and it's got a lot of those fruity, juicy flavors.
Yeah. So.
All right, let's wrap this up with the chocolate factory that has a meltdown. Milk chocolate imperial stout, 8.3%. Why is it to be a meltdown?
Look at that label. It's crazy.
So what do we got? We got like a jack-o'-lantern type scarecrow thing.
What's that character's name?
Jacko.
In front of a factory, there's a UFO. Is that a UFO that I see?
Yeah.
Okay. There's a story here. I feel like this is something that Jordan Peele might make his next movie from.
This looks like a dream.
It does.
An unpleasant one.
And I guess, is that chocolate literally melting down from the factory? Like, what do we got going on here?
A little bit of that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. It's basically you guys went for the entire weird boat dream sequence of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Yep. I think that was actually when we were talking about what to name this, was that not what came up?
What
was the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory scenario?
What would
happen if that factory melted down like Chernobyl? Yeah.
Yeah.
Like if Veruca Salt really did clog up the place, uh-huh. And what would happen?
Yeah. The Oompa Loompas would be freed and not know what to do with themselves.
This is true. Yeah, nobody talks about the labor issues with the Oompa Loompas, man. Nobody talks about that. I just remember as a kid watching that movie and Gene Wilder just freaking everybody out with the, praying mantis head getting eaten off and various other things that happened in that that boat sequence.
Now we all just get angry with Grandpa Joe because we find out he's just lazy until he wins his grandson wins a trip.
Yeah, he kind of was. Yeah, he kind of was.
He did nothing, then magically he could dance.
He really was just kind of loafing through it, right? And then, look at you with the golden ticket, freeloader.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, what's up with that? That's a cautionary tale. Maybe it's all a cautionary tale for child actors and the parents. What was that show with the tiny dancers? Oh, jeez, Dance Moms.
Oh,
that's what it was. Dance Moms.
I've not seen that.
Oh yeah, you don't want to. It's like really, it's a hellscape.
Now I want to.
But now you want to, and I bet you it'll inspire.
Now you
want to
make a label with it.
Yeah,
I don't want to see it sober though.
All right, so. This was pretty straightforward with a milk chocolate imperial stout. So what all goes into this?
It's basically your lactose, cocoa nib.
Where are you getting that from?
The cocoa nibs, they're from Ecuador.
Oh, okay.
So we use spiced rum to actually extract, and that breaks out the pores, so it's actually not the chocolate thing, what everybody's using these days. It's the old school from the real product.
Gotcha.
I think that really gives a nice... I mean, if you know chocolate, you know real chocolate.
Yes.
If you know imitation chocolate, you know imitation chocolate.
This is real chocolate.
This tastes like real chocolate.
Bitterness to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not...
And still soft at the same time.
Sure, but it doesn't... Like, I like dark chocolate.
I love dark
chocolate. Bitter dark chocolate. I'm not a milk chocolate fan.
Right. Yep.
So just because this has lactose in it doesn't mean it tastes like milk chocolate to
me. And it's not a pastry stout.
Right.
Yeah.
The intent, like all these beers are balanced. Like with Lunatic, once you get over the initial shock of that bitterness up front and you have a couple more tastes, that bitterness really softens up and you get the sweet malt.
Yeah.
You know, there's the balance is intended.
Okay.
Before we let you guys go real quick, you guys have, you have great taproom space, but I know you're putting on a festival here next month, a music festival.
Yes. Let's talk Mom Rock.
Oh, Tim's killed this thing.
About 3 years ago, we were approached by a company that's now defunct, but they really wanted to do some concert in combination with us. So in 2021, we did our first Carolina Indie Fest, and mm-hmm. it was awesome. We had over 40 bands, and
awesome.
It was absolutely wild. And then last year, the day that they were supposed to submit their application to the city, they filed for bankruptcy.
Ugh.
Yeah. So we decided to take it over, and in 3 months we planned Indie Fest 2.
Okay.
And just sort of 10 bands, 2 days, on our property sort of thing.
Yeah.
Right? But it's open to the public, it's free, and we had an awesome time last year. This year we're actually going for 2.
What's the date? What are the dates?
May 12th and 13th.
Okay.
Number of bands from all across North Carolina, including some Raleigh-based bands.
Mm-hmm.
And then these guys, the
Mom
you
Rock.
Can't see. It's a podcast. So yeah, Mom Rock is one of the stars of the show.
Which is a lovely play on Dad Rock. I love
yes.
it.
So they're a lot of fun. They're young. They're they've got this thing that they've done with like Sister Hazel.
Yeah.
They've performed with Sister Hazel.
Yeah.
They've done, they're about to do Shaky Knees in Atlanta mm-hmm. and, be performing on the same stage as the Yeah Yeah Yeahs and the Killers and the Lumineers and just some amazing bands.
That's great.
If you listen to their stuff, they just performed at the Hall River Ballroom 2-3 weeks ago and absolutely killed it. They were so much fun, and I love these guys. I think every year when we do this, there's always a band that you say, okay, they're going places.
Yeah.
Or they could go somewhere. You
sure.
never know what's happening. But
Mom Rock it is.
Mom Rock it is. So 2 days, we start on May 12th, we finish somewhere after 10 o'clock on May 13th.
Are they? So they're not a Steely Dan cover band? Is what you're telling me.
No,
they're
I don't
not.
Know.
They're not War on Drugs Part 2.
No.
Oh,
okay.
Man.
Gotcha.
No. These are all great references. Though.
Tim has taken the concept of the brewery and put together an indie fest to where the bands are all extraordinary performers, very good at what they do, wonderful musicians, but man, they're off slightly. There's just something weird about everything that comes in that really makes you kind of stop and take pause and listen to them.
Okay.
There's a wonderful band. I'm going to one last thing. Just because they've played in the Raleigh area for a decade, there's a band called Blood Red River.
Mm-hmm.
You should look them up. If you don't know them already, they are a lot of fun. They are what the soundtrack to a Quentin Tarantino film would sound like.
Oh, okay. I'm envisioning
so Reservoir band. Dogs.
Super Sound of the 70s?
of surf rock and funk and rockabilly all mixed together.
Don't cut off my ear, please. Yeah. Thank you. Well, thanks for coming in, guys. The beers were fantastic. And I'm curious about this indie rock fest. You might see me out there with my 15-year-old. But that's going to wrap it up for this edition of the 919 Beer Podcast. We will see y'all. What do we got coming up next week?
We're going to Tasty next week.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That'll be fun. And we promise an exclusive with Wayne in between. He's going to drop all his hot takes in the next podcast. We'll see you then.
Cheers.
Thank you, gents.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the 919 Beer Podcast with hosts Joe Ovius, Adam Eshbaugh, and Wayne Holt. Don't forget, there are many ways you can listen to this podcast, including streaming at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL Sports Fan app. And you can also subscribe for free at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Pocket Casts, and TuneIn. Thanks again for listening to the 919 Beer Podcast.